Okay, we're beginning here on the bottom of Zayin Amud Bet. The Gemara here is following up on the statement of Shmuel, which we had, Amar Yehuda Mashmuel, Halacha k'Rabbi Eliezer ba'arba. Halacha is like Rabbi Eliezer in four instances. And then of yesterday's daf, we went through the four Mishnayot, where the Halacha is like Rabbi Eliezer. The problem the Gemara introduced was that in three out of those four cases, the Mishnah itself says Halacha k'Rabbi Eliezer. So what do we need Shmuel to tell us that halacha? The Gemara's conclusion is that the Mishnah telling you that information is not normative. You need an Amora to come along and say the halacha is that way. You need a Gemara, Talmud, something that is a latter perspective to tell you that the halacha is that way. And that's why the statement of Shmuel is so important over here, because it really is the determining factor that the halacha is like Rabbi Eliezer. The Gemara asks, Betuleka, are there no other instances where the halacha is like Rabbi Eliezer from the Mishnah? Titnan. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Melamdim et haktana shetimain bo. We teach the ktana to do miyun. This is a case in Yuvamot. An individual is married to a ktana. The individual married a girl who was a yitoma. She was orphaned. Her father's not around. Her mother or brother married her off, which is nisuin kedushin midrabanan. The whole institution is a rabbinic marriage. So this individual is married to this ketana. Then his brother is married to the sister of this ketana, but the sister he's married to is a gdola. She's a woman already of age. If two brothers married to two sisters, one brother married to a gdola, one married to the ketana. The brother that's married to the sister that's of age passes away without any children. So the older sister now is available for Yibum. And the problem is that the brother who's married to the Ktana can't marry the Gdola because that's Achot Ishto, the sister of his wife, which is an Erva. But the truth is, Min HaTorah, there is no Erva over here because he's not married to the Ktana. He's only married to the Ktana, Midrabanan. So the solution would be to divorce this Ktana and then marry the Gdola. Problem with that is, once he divorces the Ktana, the Gdola becomes Achot Grushato, which is also restricted. Now the truth is that it's only a Grusha Midrabanan, so it's only an Achot Grushato Midrabanan, but optically, it looks like Achot Grushato, we're not going to let him marry. There is a way to dissolve a marriage of a Ktana that is an empowerment Midrabanan to this young girl. So in order to dissolve this marriage of the Ktana to her husband, if she decides that she no longer wants to be in the marriage, there's a concept called miyun, where she basically says, "Efshi, I'm no longer interested in this marriage," and she can walk out of the marriage. That dissolves the marriage. It is an annulment of the marriage, and it's as if the marriage never existed. So what Rabbi Eliezer says, in this instance, where we have the two brothers married to the two sisters, brother married to the sister of age passed away, the brother is married to the Tana. Now, Midoraita has an issue of Yibum, and has a problem Midrabanan. So what we do is, Melamdim et haktana, we teach this young girl to reject her husband, to annul the marriage, and in doing so, it's as if it never existed. This annulment, this miyun, is a dissolution retroactively, as if he was never married to the Tana. If he's not married to the Tana, now he can perform Yibum with the Gdola. And then he'll accomplish Yibum and not have a problem of Erva Achot Gerushato. That's Rabbi Eliezer's suggestion in this case. From Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Halacha ki Rabbi Eliezer. Once again, we have Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel, the same Bala Memra, saying that the Halacha is like Rabbi Eliezer. This is the fifth instance where it's true. Why did he say it only four instances? Ki Amar Shmuel, Halacha ki Rabbi Eliezer b'dalid. When Shmuel said the Halacha is like Rabbi Eliezer in four instances, the Seder Taharot. That's an issues of Tumah and Tahara. All the cases that we dealt with yesterday are Tumah and Tahara cases. Aval Bishar Starim, Ikatuva. But in other Starim besides Taharot, there are other instances where the Halacha is like Rabbi Eliezer, including the one we just quoted, which is from Yevamot, where we say the Halacha is like Rabbi Eliezer, that we teach the Ktana to annul the marriage in order to allow for Yibum to be formed Midoraita. But how can I mean Mistavra? And that makes a lot of sense. Ditanan. We have another Mishnah of Rabbi Eliezer where we pass on like him. Rabbi Eliezer Meir, Afarodeh, Noten Nisal, after he scrapes off the bread from the internal oven, Natan Nisal and places it into the basket, Hasal Mitzarfan Nechala. The Sal aggregates them to be Chayav in Chala. Very important din. The requirements of Chala are that it be 5/4 of a kav worth of dough in order to be Chayavet in Chala. Isa needs to be that size. It's a pretty large size. If you don't reach that requisite size, you're not chayav to separate out or to remove chala from the dough. You knead them and bake them in smaller quantities. You're never going to get to a chiyuv chala because you never meet the requisite size. What Rabbi Eliezer says is that's true if you do not bring them together at a latter point. The time of chiyuv for chala is the time of kneading. At the time of kneading, you kept them in these smaller quantities, so you're not chayav in chala. On the other hand, after you bake them, you take them out of the oven. Their day, the way they baked bread was that they stuck the dough to the walls of the oven, and then it baked on the walls, and then to take it off, you had to be rodeh. You had to scrape it off. You needed a trowel. You scraped the bread off. It was actually a talent. The Gemara in Shabbat calls it chokhmahi. It is a type of umanut, craftsmanship. You scraped off the bread without losing the bread, without ruining the bread, and then you placed it into a basket. What Rabbi Eliezer says is, if you take all those loaves of bread, those small loaves of bread, and put them into a single basket, that aggregates them to meet the minimum threshold of chiyuv chala. So that is, after the fact, you can still be mitzaref them to reach that requisite shiur. This becomes very important with regards to matzah. When you bake matzot, they don't want to be mafrish, the dough beforehand for the chala, because then you have a risk of chametz issues. So the solution to the problem is actually Rabbi Eliezer's suggestion, which is today, when they bake matzot, they're not mafrish chala up front. They bake all the matzot. After they bake the matzot, they aggregate the matzot together. They either put them into a single casing, or they take a cloth and they wrap them up in a cloth, and then they're mafrish chala after the matzot are baked. Using the sheet of Rabbi Eliezer, that a sal mitzarfan, that you can aggregate them to reach the requisite shiur after the fact. And again, because by matzah, if you were to be mafrish ahead of time, there are big risks and issues of chametz, and therefore we'd rather do it after the fact than before the fact. We saw yesterday that the Balei HaTosafot were discussing, in terms of a sal mitzarfan, what exactly that means. And he indicated that at least the gabei chiyuv chala, the sal is enough, the basket or the aggregating kli is enough. With regards to being yotze the din of mukaf, of taking off the chala from something that is adjacent to the chala that you're removing, he thought that maybe you needed something beyond just the kli, that maybe you actually had to have them touching each other in order for that to be the case. But as far as chiyuv chala, a sal mitzarfan. Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel, halacha Rabbi Eliezer. Once again, we have Shmuel coming along and saying the halacha is like Rabbi Eliezer. Shma mina, you see from this that there are other Mishnayot in Shas where the halacha is like Rabbi Eliezer, but they're outside the world of Taharot. And so Rabbi Shmuel said in the name of Rabbi Yehuda that the halacha is like Rabbi Eliezer in four places. That's in the world of Taharot. My ume dahai mehai. What's better about the second Mishnah that you brought than the first Mishnah? You brought the first Mishnah, and that seemed to indicate there's a halacha like Rabbi Eliezer and other Mishnayot. And then the Gemara says, okay, maybe that's in Taharot that the limit is for. Outside of Taharot, there are more. And I'll prove it to you, because they bring another Mishnah. Why is the second Mishnah more of a proof that the halacha is like Rabbi Eliezer outside the world of Taharot than the first Mishnah that we brought? The Gemara just doesn't say, oh, we're right because there's another Mishnah. Where it says we're right and brings an alternate Mishnah to show that they are correct. So the answer to that is, Mishum Dekoi Rabbi Elazar Kavate. That's because in the first instance that we brought by the Yibum case, Rabbi Elazar also holds like him. So we're going to have here a number of individuals mentioned. Rabbi Eliezer, who we have been discussing for the last two daf. That's Rabbi Eliezer ben Hurkunus, the Talmid of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. The Rabbi Eliezer HaGadol, he was the one that is found in the story of Tarnum Shachnai in Parakat Zahav. He was put into Shamta, into excommunication for the altercation and fighting the Chachamim with regards to Tarnum Shachnai. Rabbi Eliezer, also the Rebbe, or one of the Rebbeim of Rabbi Akiva. That's the Rabbi Eliezer we're speaking about. There's also a Rabbi Elazar. Now Rabbi Elazar is a Tana known as Rabbi Elazar ben Shamua. Rabbi Elazar ben Shamua is the Stam Rabbi Elazar that's found in the Mishnah. And that's what we're about to quote now from the Mishnah, is the position of Rabbi Elazar. There's also a Rabbi Elazar that appears in the Gemara on a very frequent basis. And that's Rabbi Elazar ben Pedat. He's an Amora, the Talmid Chaver of Rabbi Yochanan. So all of these individuals are going to make appearances here, so just keep in mind, in order not to confuse between Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Elazar, and Rabbi Elazar, we'll indicate in each case who the individual is, but keep that in mind. So we have Rabbi Eliezer ben Hurkunus, who's telling us that a Ktana lamdinota lemain. We teach the Ktana to do miyun, and that's what we spoke about before. That's where Shmuel said, Alokha ki Rabbi Eliezer, and that was evidence of the fact that there are other Mishnayot where the Alokha is like Rabbi Eliezer. The Gemara now says, why is that not such a strong proof that the Alokha is like Rabbi Eliezer in other cases? That's because Rabbi Elazar, the Tana, Rabbi Elazar ben Shamua, also says the same thing. It's not Rabbi Elazar Omer, Melamdim et HaKtana, Shittima Einbo. He has the same Shita. So maybe the reason we pass him like Rabbi Eliezer is not because it's Rabbi Eliezer's opinion, but because someone else backs him up, which is Rabbi Elazar ben Shamua. Umar Gemara says, Umikai, is he really holding like him? Vaha atzruchu mitzrachinan lehu. In the Gemara in Yevamot, in Daf Kuf Yud Aleph, there's the Mishnah, which quotes Rabbi Elazar's opinion. Right afterwards in the Gemara, it says, Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel, halacha ki Rabbi Elazar. The halacha is like Rabbi Elazar ben Shamua of that Mishnah. And the Gemara right away says, why did he need to say that? Didn't he already say, halacha ki Rabbi Eliezer? In the Mishnah that we quoted from Yevamot on Daf Kuf Yud, that we said that he says, teach them to do miyun. And he said, the halacha is like Rabbi Eliezer ben Hurkunus. So why do you have to tell me the same thing twice? The halacha is like Rabbi Eliezer, and the halacha is like Rabbi Elazar, since they both are saying the same thing. Teach the Ktana to do miyun. The answer of the Gemara there is, atzrechu metzrachin alu. They've created tzrichuta, which is that the two cases are not necessarily parallel. The case of Rabbi Eliezer ben Hurkunus is the one that we described, which is you have two brothers, one married to a Gdola, and one married to Ktana, who are sisters. That was the scenario that we discussed. The scenario here is a case where the brother is married to a Gdola and a Ktana, and then the brother passes away. And now the brother is left to deal with these two Yevamot. Yes, a Yevama Gdola and a Yevama Ktana from his brother. If he is Miyabem, the Gdola first, then there's nothing to speak about because the Yevam is performed. And even if he sleeps with the other wife, the Ktana, or one of his brothers does, that's a biat znut and has no impact. On the other hand, if he does yibum with the ktana, and then he sleeps with the gedola, or one of his brothers sleeps with the gedola, pasalet haktana. He ruins the ktana, because the yibum with the ktana is an uncertainty as to whether it is toface, and the gedola is definitely toface mito oraita if it was a proper yibum. So if we do nothing here, then both women will be disqualified because the Tana is disqualified by the Yibum of the Gdola. And the Yibum of the Gdola is disqualified because it's possible that the Tana did have Yibum before the Gdola was ever had Yibum performed with her. So the solution of the Mishnah is that both of them are Asurim to him, and then they would have to perform Chalitza with the Gdola and wait for the Tana to grow up to perform Chalitza with her, as well as give them Gidin. Over there, Rabbi Elazar says, teach the Ktana to do miyun, because the miyun is an annulment retroactively, and then it'd be as if she was never married to that brother. She can annul her connection to this whole case, and in that way, permit the gdola to perform yibum with the brother. So the cases are different, and that's what the Gemara points out, that the case of Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Elazar are nuanced different, but that means that if you say the halacha is like one, doesn't necessarily mean the halacha is like the other. So here in this case, the one of Rabbi Elazar ben Shamua, over there you have both that are available for Yibum. And if we allow Miyun to be performed, then he can perform Yibum with the Gdola. Now, if we say the Lacha is like that, that's because maybe over here, both of them are available for the Yibum, and he has no prior relationship with these women. On the other hand, the case of Rabbi Eliezer, he's already married to the Ktana. So maybe in the case where he's already married to the Tana, we're not going to force the Miyun issue in order to release him to perform evil. But over here, where he was never married, he didn't have a relationship with either party, maybe there we'll say perform Miyun because then he can perform evil with the Gdolah, and vice versa. You told me about the case of Rabbi Lazar ben Hurkunus, do Miyun in order to facilitate evil. That's because without the Miyun, there's going to be no evil at all. Whereas in the case here, he already performed evil with at least one of the women, and now we're just doing the Miyun in order to facilitate evil with the Gdolah and prevent him from having to divorce her. So here, there's already Yibum. So maybe you would say the Halacha is not like Rabbi Elazar in this case. So you could come up with a scenario where you would say the Halacha is like Rabbi Elazar ben Hurkunus, not like Rabbi Elazar ben Shammah, or vice versa. You'd say the Halacha is like Rabbi Elazar ben Shammah, not Rabbi Elazar ben Hurkunus. And even though they're giving the same advice, the cases are different. And since the cases are different, you need to tell me the Halacha is like each one of them. But if that's true, that means that Rabbi Elazar is not backing up the position of Rabbi Elazar ben Hurkunus. He has a totally different position. They're independent positions. So Gemara says, okay, El Mishum Dekai Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava Kavate. The reason that we say that the Halacha is like Rabbi Elazar in the case of Rabbi Maud may not be because the Halacha is like Rabbi Elazar. Might be because Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava backs him up. And that's from the Mishnah in Idiot, which is the Tanya. If it is the Mishnah in Idiot, then it's the Tanan. Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava, heid hei dvarim. He testified to five things. Remember, Ediot is an aggregation of a single day in the Beit Midrash. It was the day that Rabban Gamliel was deposed and Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was appointed as the Nasi. And on that day, they opened up the doors of the Beit Midrash and allowed everybody in. On that day, Bobayom. That's what Bobayom means in Shas. Bobayom is recorded in Ediot. All the individuals who came in and gave testimony as to what they had in the Mesorah. This is one of those testimonies. Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava came in, hey Dvarim, said five things. Number one, Shemimahanim et Tanot, that you can perform Miyun with a minor. Shemisin et Isha et Akad, you can marry off a woman based on a single aid. This is in a situation of an aguna, where a husband went overseas. A husband was in war or in some natural disaster. We have one aid to his demise, to his death. That's sufficient grounds to allow the wife to remarry after that, to free her of being in aguna. So that's Mesina Tisha Be'erachad. Sheniskal Tanagol B'Yerushalayim Sheraget Nefesh. They stoned a chicken in Yerushalayim for killing someone. Obviously, it would have to be a baby or a very young child that the chicken killed. But the punishment of Skila in the Torah for Behema that kills is only associated with a shore, with an ox. So how do you know that other behemoth are subject to that same din? The Gemara learns a zereshava of shore from Shabbat. Just like by Shabbat, when it mentions shore and chamor, there it's not literally shore and chamor, because we see in other places by Shabbat it means behemtecha, your animal in general. And why does it speak about shore and chamor? Gemara says, diber ha-Torah behoveh. The Torah just speaks about the common case, or the most likely scenario. Shor and Chamor are mainstream vehicles in their day. It's the equivalent of cars, tractors in their day. So these are all the equipment that's there. Behema is a more generic category of machinery, but these things are the mainstay products that are used in all the work and transportation that they do. So Shor and Chamor are mentioned because they're the primary behemoth that are in service of individuals. But that doesn't mean that that's not true about behemoth in general. We know that from the Torah in Shabbat, which uses behemoth in some places, shor chamor in other places. And we use that as a gzeirah shavah to the shor muad that kills a human being that's chayav stila. Similarly, all animals have that same din. And Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava is corroborating that by saying that there was a tarnagol that was killed in Yerushalayim for killing a human being. So you see that it's not limited to shor. It applies to all animals. Wine that is 40 days old can be put as a wine libation on the Mizbeach. You need yayin. You need something that has fermented, has already become a wine, in order for it to be ra'oy in the Mizbeach. The minimum amount of time you need is 40 days. After 40 days, that wine is already qualified to go on the Mizbeach. This, in the Gemara and Bava Batra, is a big discussion. You can see the Bali Tosafot already quoting the Gemara Baba Batra. Before 40 days, it's considered Yayin Migito. It's considered wine right out of the vat. or in essence, it's considered grape juice. Va'af agav damrinan, even though we say in Baba Batra, yayin migito, bring wine straight out of the vat, imevi kasher. If you bring it, it's still kasher to go on the mizbeach. Nevertheless, ben yon yom is l'chatchila. That's what Rabbi Ben Bava is testifying. If you want to do the mitzvah l'chatchila, once you cross over the 40th day, that already qualifies as wine. Less than that is yayin migito, and is either disqualified from the mizbeach, or can be put on the mizbeach b'di avad, and then that has implications as far as kiddush is concerned. The Gemara says that any wine that can't go on the mizbeach is not ra'oi l'kiddush. So if grape juice is not good for going on the mizbeach, then it shouldn't be good for kiddush, and that's the major discussion in the Rishonim there. It's a major machloket Rishonim with regards to grape juice, machloket between the Rishonei Ashkenaz versus other Rishonim as to whether grape juice is qualified. And we discussed in the Gemara Baba Batra as to why today we are allowed or we do have permission to use grape juice for Kiddush, despite what seemingly is a dismissal by the Gemara of using grape juice for Kiddush. Val Tamid Shel Shachar Shekarev B'Dalet Sha'ot. And he also spoke about the Tamid Shel Shachar, that it was brought on the fourth hour of the day, which is late in the day. They usually brought it earlier. That relates to the machloket between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim in Tefillot HaShachar as to when the Zman of Shacharit is in the morning. Now the Gemara says the first case which I didn't discuss, which was Mimanein et Aktanot. They have a right to annul marriages with minors. My Ktanot. Why is Ktanot written in plural? Lav Chad de Rabbi Elazar v'chad de Rabbi Eliezer. Is he therefore backing up the positions of Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Elazar? They both say in different contexts that we teach the girl to do miun in order to facilitate yibum midoraita. So he used the word ktanot in plural to indicate that the aloche is like Rabbi Elazar ben Shamua, as well as like Rabbi Eliezer ben Horkunus. It says, lo, my ktanot. Why does he use the word ktanot in plural? Ktanot da alma just means minors in general. Doesn't mean two cases that involve a minor, but rather that when you have minors that are in these situations, then you do miun, or we recommend miun, but he's only backing up the position of Rabbi Elazar ben Shemua. He's not backing up the position of Rabbi Elazar ben Hurkunus. If that's the case, in the next scenario that's brought by Rabbi Yudim and Baba, Kavisha Nami, by its saying there that Masina Taisha Piedachat, why does he use the word Isha in singular? Nitnei Nashim. Right? Nashim in plural. V'neima Nashim Da'alma. That women in general who are in these circumstances, then we allow them to get married up Yed Echad. Why do you switch from the plural in the case of Tanot to the singular in the case of Isha? Ela, Midahoch Tani Isha. Since in the second scenario he said it in the singular formulation, V'hoch Tani Tanot, and here he used the plural formulation, Shmamina, dafka ktani, shmamina. There's clear that he meant ktanot in plural for a purpose, not a generic minors, the plurality, but rather the two cases where minors are taught to do miyun. That's the case or scenario of Rabbi Elazar ben Hurkunus, as well as the scenario of Rabbi Elazar ben Shamua. Shmamina, we have a backup here for Rabbi Elazar. That means Rabbi Yehuda ben Baba also holds like Rabbi Elazar. If that's the case, maybe the reason we paskin like Rabbi Eliezer in the case of Yivama is not because we think Rabbi Eliezer is right, but because Rabbi Yehuda ben Baba also holds like Rabbi Eliezer there. And that's why we paskin like that. So there you can't prove that there are other Mishnayot where we paskin halacha like Rabbi Eliezer, because that might be a unique case because some other Tana backs him up. So then when we bring the proof from Chala, that's a real proof. Because there, it's the position Rabbi Eliezer ben Hurkunus, and no one else. And yet we still paskin like him. So that shows you that we paskin like Rabbi Eliezer in other instances in Shas, just outside the world of Tarot, where we limited it to four cases. Now the Gemara brings, V'chein amar Rabbi Elazar, halocha ki Rabbi Eliezer bidalit. So here is Rabbi Elazar ben Pedat, the Amora, saying that the halocha is like Rabbi Eliezer ben Hurkunus in four instances. In essence, you have now a memra from Rabbi Elazar ben Pedat the Amora that is similar to Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel in Bavel. Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel, where you're dealing with like a second generation Amora in Bavel, is saying the halachas like Rabbi Eliezer in four instances. And then you have a second generation Amora in Eretz Yisrael that's saying the same thing, that the halachas like Rabbi Eliezer in four instances. And the Gemara says, Betuleka, are there no more instances? Vatznan Rabbi Eliezer, Meir Melamdim, Naktanot, Shetameinbo. Ve'amar Rabbi Elazar, halacha ki Rabbi Eliezer. And Rabbi Elazar ben Pedati Amora says the halachas like Rabbi Eliezer ben Hurkanos. Very similar to Shmuel. The Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel said the halacha is like Rabbi Eliezer in four instances. And then again, in the case of Yivamot, Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel says halacha ki Rabbi Eliezer. And we have the same thing in the name of Rabbi Eliezer ben Pedat the Amora. But he says the halacha is like Rabbi Eliezer in four places. And he says the halacha is like him by Yivama. V'chi teima ki Amar Rabbi Eliezer halacha ki Rabbi Eliezer bedalid. If you want to say now, give the same answer here for Rabbi Eliezer ben Pedat the Amora, like we did for Shmuel before, it's not going to work. Because if you want to say that Rabbi Elazar ben Pedat, when he said the halacha is like Rabbi Elazar ben Hurkanos in four instances, that's only in Seder Darot, above Ashar Sidre Ika, but in other instances, we will have cases where the halacha is like Rabbi Eliezer, Umi Ika, are there really other instances? V'atnan, we have a Mishnah in Shvit, Haveret V'akofer, V'alotem V'aktaf. So these are items, as Rashi says over here, min bisamim heim. They are fragrances, they are spices, and the question is, does Kedushat Shvi'it apply to these items? Vered is a rose, and kofar is known as cypress flower, or in Arabic it's henna, and the lotem is like the lot in Breishit Lamed Zayin Chav Hei, is either lotus or gum mastich, and then there's the ktaf. The Rambam says that it's the balsam tree, but does explain that it is the sap of an aromatic or fragrant tree. And Ikra, it's also called Sri, which we know from the Pitom HaKtoret, and the Targum Onkelos of Sri, he translates it as katva. The one that we're really after is the taf, as Rashi explains over here, the type of tree, Ve'eno Sepri, it doesn't produce fruits, Ela Saraf. But it does produce sap, zepirio. That's the fruit of this tree. The fruit of this tree is the sap, not the fruits, because it doesn't produce any fruits. So now, the Mishnah says, yesh lehen shvi'it. Shvi'it has application to these items. Ulad mehen shvi'it. And if they were sold for cash, then that money has kedushat shvi'it associated with them. Yesh lehen biur. They have a requirement of biur, which means that they are not perennials, they are annuals, and that means at a certain point they will no longer be available in the field. And once it's kala mechaya minasadeh, once it's no longer available to the animals, the wild animals out in the field, then you have to even va'er peirot shvi'it from your possession. What the biur means, whether that simply means to be mafkirit, whether it means to do biur, to actually burn it, machloket rishonim as to what the requirement of biur shvi'it is, but they have biur. And similarly, if the Kedushat Shvi'it was transferred onto money, it also has that same requirement of biur. So here you have a Mishnah that tells us about certain items that have Kedushat Shvi'it. The one that we're focused on is taf, which you actually mention every day in the Pitom HaKtoret. B'shimen Gamliel Omer, Hatzari, Enola Sraf, Hanotef, Me'atzei HaKtaf. So that the Tzari that is mentioned in the ingredients of the Ktoret is only the seraph, the sap, hanotef, that drips out of, I'd say, haketaf. So that's what we're speaking about here in the Mishnah, the taf. Rashi says that the taf is the name of the tree. It also is the name of the fruit that comes out of it, which is the sap. They have a din of shvit, which Rashi says, interestingly enough here, the din of shvit means, tzarich lahafkiram, you are required to release ownership for them, which means that you can't have private ownership during Shvi'it. Everything is hefker. Vasur lasot behem schora. And you can't do business with them. You can't transact with them. You can't exert ownership over them. And you also can't do commercial transactions with them. And then they have biur. So now you see that this taf, this sap, is subject to the din of Shvi'it. Ve'amar Rabbi Pedat. And Rabbi Pedat says, Matana katfa peret. Who's the one who says that the katfa, sap, it's not the tree, it's seem in general, people don't think are subject to shvi'it. The katfa here is not the tree itself, but the fruit of the tree, the sap that's coming out of the tree. So that katfa, who's the one who says that the sap of that tree is Pera. It's considered to be a fruit, and therefore it's subject to Shvi'it. Rabbi Eliezer. It's the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer. Ve'amar Rabbi Zeira. Rabbi Zeira says, Chaza deminach u'me'avuch. From you and from your father, kasharitu katfa li'alma. You guys are matir, sap to the world. Amt amart. You, Rabbi Padat, said, mantana katfa peyre. Who's the one who says that the sap is considered to be like a fruit? Rabbi Eliezer, meaning Rabbi Eliezer ben Hurkanus. Vavuch amar. And your father says, halacha ki Rabbi Eliezer bidalid. The halacha is like Rabbi Eliezer only in four instances. That means halacha is not like Rabbi Eliezer in this case. So he's saying that if you combine your opinion and your father's opinion, you now are matir sap to the world. Maybe that sap is not subject to Shvi'it, and we'll see also now that it may not be subject to Orla as well. That is because the individual we're speaking about here is Rabbi Padat. Rabbi Padat is both the father of Rabbi Lazar ben Padat and the son of Rabbi Lazar ben Padat. The son was named after his grandfather. So you have Rabbi Lazar ben Padat, who's the Amora, who made the statement that the Halacha is like Rabbi Eliezer in four instances. And then his son, Rabbi Padat, says, who's the author of that position that the Ktaf in Shvi'it is subject to Shvi'it because the sap of the tree? It's Rabbi Eliezer ben Hurkanus. Rabbi Zera says, if I take your position that identifies the author of that position of the Mishnah in Shvi'it as Rabbi Eliezer ben Hurkanus, and I combine that with your father's statement that the Halacha is only like Rabbi Eliezer in four instances, and this is not one of those four instances, then between the two of you, you'll be min matir, sap, to the world. The easy answer to that should have been what we had said until now. Vimita, if you think that when he said Halacha Rabbi Eliezer in four instances only in Seder Tarot, then lemalei, tiyamar abba Halacha Rabbi Eliezer, bedalit, when my father said that Halacha Rabbi Eliezer in four instances, that's b'Seder Tarot. Abba b'shar sidre ika. But in other starim, it could be that the halacha is like Rabbi Eliezer over here. Who says that my father is saying the halacha is not like Rabbi Eliezer over here? He only was speaking about Seder Tarot. He wasn't speaking about other starim. Ela kasho hahi. What are you going to do with the Mishnah in Yevamot where Rabbi Eliezer ben Padat says the halacha is like Rabbi Eliezer when he said before there's only four instances where the halacha is like him? Shum dekoi Rabbi Eliezer kavatei. It's not. Rabbi Lazar Omer, Melam Dimit the Tana, Shetameinbo. That's not a problem because Rabbi Lazar ben Shamua, the Tana, holds like Rabbi Eliezer ben Hurkanus. We saw before, the two Mishnayot and Yevamot that have that overlapping position, which is that they both say, teach the Tana to do Miyun. Umi Koi, is he really saying the same thing? We said before that Shmuel had to say the Lach was like both of those instances, because the two are not similar. Lo dami lo adodi. They can be disassociated from each other. Rabbi Shom de Koyit, Rabbi Yehuda ben Bova kavatei. That's because Rabbi Yehuda ben Bova backed him up. That's what we proved before in the Mishnah in Idiot. Rabbi Yehuda ben Bova backed up Rabbi Eliezer ben Hurkanus. And that's why the Loch is like him, not because it's Rabbi Eliezer ben Hurkanus. And that's how we solved the problem. Now what about the problem of the Mishnah in Challah? Before we said in the Mishnah of Challah, the halacha was like Rabbi Eliezer ben Hurkanus. Over there, the statement that the halacha is like Rabbi Eliezer ben Hurkanus was made by Shmuel. That's Amir Yehuda, my Shmuel, halacha, Rabbi Eliezer. So that's a problem for Shmuel, where he says four times the halacha is like Rabbi Eliezer, and then two more times he says the halacha is like Rabbi Eliezer, which means that it's not limited to four. Over here, we're dealing with Rabbi Eliezer ben Padat, the Amora. He said the halacha is like Rabbi Eliezer ben Hurkanus in four instances. And he also said the halacha is like Rabbi Eliezer in the Mishnah in Yevamot. He never made a statement about the Mishnah in Challah, and therefore it's not a question on him from the Mishnah in Challah, because he never says halacha like Rabbi Eliezer by that Mishnah. So that's why that's not a problem for him, where it was either an issue if we didn't solve it for Shmuel. The solution for Shmuel is to say Shmuel was only speaking in the world of Tarot. Outside the world of Tarot, the halacha is like Rabbi Eliezer in more instances, including Miyun by the Yevamah, as well as by the case of Challah, that the Sal is Mitzarfan. And for Rabbi Eliezer ben Padat, the Loch is like Rabbi Eliezer in four instances, and that's it. Nothing to do with Tarot, that's the limit. The one other case where he mentions the Loch is like Rabbi Eliezer ben Hurkanus is because he was backed by Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava, not because it's Rabbi Eliezer by himself. Now Gemara says, Tuleka, and there are no other instances, Vatanan. Rabbi Gibomer, Omra, Bracha, Rivit. When it comes to Havdalah, in Shmoneh Esrei, you put in a new bracha, a fourth bracha, after the Gimel Rishonot, before Atachonein, you put in a fourth bracha, that is the bracha of Havdalah. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, it's Rabbi Eliezer ben Hurkanus Omer, Omra Behoda, you say it in Ritzeh, somewhat similar or akin to Yaleh V'Yavo, that's where you're going to say Havdalah. Vama Rabbi Lazar, Halacha Ki Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Lazar ben Padat, the Amora, says in this instance again, Halacha Ki Rabbi Eliezer. That's the problem. Because now, how do we solve this problem? We said only in four instances, and that's it. The halacha is like Rabbi Eliezer ben Hurkanus. We brought the one case in Yevamah where Rabbi Lazar ben Padat said the halacha is like Rabbi Eliezer. Said there, it's not because it's Rabbi Lazar, it's because Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava. But now I have a case in Brachot, in the case of Havdalah, where Rabbi Lazar ben Padat, the Amora, is saying the halacha is like Rabbi Lazar ben Hurkanus. So Amar Rabbi Abba, how damar mishum Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel. That's because it was said in the name of Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel, which is why the halacha is like Rabbi Eliezer. De Tanya, we have a bright Rabbi Kiva Omer, Umra Bracha Revi, Bifnei Atzma. Again, Havdalah is added in as a independent fourth bracha. Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel Omer, Umra Behoda. So here, the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer ben Hurkanus, here is stated by Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel. Or it's equivalent to the case of Yvamot. We have Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava backing up Rabbi Eliezer ben Hurkanus saying the same thing. Here we have Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel saying the same thing as Rabbi Eliezer ben Hurkanus. Va koshish mine tuva. That doesn't exactly work because he is much older than him. Because Rabbi Eliezer ben Hurkanus is in the time of Rabbi Gamliel, the son of Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. That's Rabbi Gamliel of Yavne. And Rabbi Gamliel of Yavne follows the nisiyut of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Rabbi Gamliel of Yavne, whose father was Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, was killed as one of the Asara Harugei Malchut. He was one of the first two. There they have the Kohen Gadol and Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. It's the Nasi and the Kohen Gadol, and they throw lots to see who's going to be killed first. That's his father, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Rabbi Gamliel cannot take over as the Nasi because the Romans are persecuting. The Davidic line is part of their retribution for the merit. And Rabbi Shimon Gamliel was a big supporter of the merit, like Rabbi Akiva was, and that's why he's one of the Asara Harugei Malchut. So then Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai assumes the Nisiyut, because they can't get anybody from the line of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, Rabbi Gamliel, or Hillel, because they're being sought by the Romans. So Rabbi Gamliel of Yavna later becomes the Nasi after the Churban, or during that period of the Churban. That's because Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, when he leaves Yerushalayim, Vespasian gives him three requests. The three requests that he asks for are Yavna v'chachameha, a doctor for, I think it's Rabbi Tzadok, who was fasting for 80 years and needed a doctor to cure him, and that they would stop persecuting the Davidic line of the Nisiim, which then gives Rabbi Gamliel the ability to return to the Nisiut. His father had been killed, now he takes over, and that's how Rabbi Gamliel of Yavna becomes the Nasi again, because Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai secured protection for them and that they would no longer be persecuted. That's one of the three requests he makes in the Gemara and Gittin with regards to when he leaves Yerushalayim and Vespasian grants him those rights. Rabbi Eliezer ben Hurkanus is a peer of Rabbi Gamliel of Yavne. And we're quoting in the Mishnah, Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel, who's the son of Rabbi Gamliel of Yavne. So then he's much younger than Rabbi Eliezer ben Hurkanus. And so then what does it matter that he's backing Rabbi Eliezer ben Hurkanus? His backing Rabbi Eliezer ben Hurkanus gives no more cachet to Rabbi Eliezer ben Hurkanus' position because he's not a peer, he's not even older than him. You want someone who is of a peer nature or older in order to corroborate that this is the din. For some younger Tana to say it doesn't then say that the halacha should be like Rabbi Eliezer ben Hurkanus. Ela mishum dekai Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel bishitatei. It's not because Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel is backing Rabbi Eliezer ben Hurkanus, but rather it's because he holds like him. The fact that he holds like him, that shows you that that must have been the halacha. So it's not that his stating that means that Rabbi Eliezer ben Hurkanus is following a position of another Tana. It's because Rabbi Eliezer ben Hurkanus is older here. Rather, it's the other way around. The fact that Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel practices or follows that position of Rabbi Eliezer ben Hurkanus shows that that must have been the established halacha, or that's the way that we paskin. Does he really hold like Rabbi Eliezer ben Hurkanus? V'atanya, We have a braita from the Gemara in Yoma. Or Yom HaKippurim. On the night of Yom Kippur, Mitpalel Sheva, you daven Shmone Esrei of seven brachot, Umitvadeh, and you say Vidui. Shachrit, Mitpalel Sheva, Shachrit, seven brachot. Again, it's a standard tefillah of Moed and Shabbat, which is you have the Gimel Rishonot, Gimel Achronot, which are the standard in every Shmone Esrei. The degree of Shevach, the Gimel of Hodah at the end. In between, generally, we have Sheila or the Bakashot that go in between. On Shabbat and Yom Tov, we have one bracha that goes in between, which is the Birkat HaYom. It's Mikadesh Shabbat. Mikadesh Yisrael Vazmanim. Melech HaKol Haaretz, Mikadesh Yisrael VeYom HaKippurim. All that's one bracha that goes in the middle, which is Zman. That's Sheva Brachot, meaning the seven brachot that are associated. So all these cases, you daven Sheva Umitvadeh, and you say Vidui. Musaf, Mitvalel Sheva Umitvadeh. Mincha, Mitvalel Sheva Umitvadeh. Ne'ilah, Mitvalel Sheva Umitvadeh. So here you have all the five tefillot of Yom HaKippurim, Maariv, Shachrit, Musaf, Mincha, and Ne'ilah, seven brachot in the Shmoneh Esrei with the vidui afterwards. Be'arvit, Mitvalel Sheva, Me'ein Shmoneh Esrei. When it comes to Arvit, Motzei Yom HaKippurim, you daven a shortened Shmoneh Esrei. The reason to do that is that the people are under pressure because of the Tanit. They need to get home. They want to get home to eat. As you know, everybody's always rushing out to try to go eat. Instead of saying a full Shmoneh Esrei, they daven Me'ein Shmoneh Esrei. They daven a bridged version of Shmoneh Esrei, similar to the way that Alamechia is called Me'ein Birkat HaMazon, Me'ein Shalosh, which are the three brachot of Birkat HaMazon. That's the Alamechia. So too, Me'ein Shmoneh Esrei is a derivative, a tamsit, a distilled version of Shmoneh Esrei, where you do the three Rishonot of Shevach, the three Achronot of Odah, and in between you say Havineinu. Havineinu is an aggregated form of all the other 13 brachot that we normally have there. They're aggregated into a single summarized tefillah. Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel, Mishum HaTav Omer, Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel, the name of his forefather, says, Mitpalel Shmoneh Esrei. You have to daven a full Shmoneh Esrei. Rabbi Shem Tzarich Lomar Chabdala B'Chonein Adat. Because you need to say Abdullah in Chonein Adat. You need the bracha of Chonein Adat to be there in order to insert Habdalah in the Shmoneh Esrei. You say Havineinu, there's no bracha to insert the Habdalah into. First of all, the issue that we're dealing with here with regards to Yom HaKippurim is multifold. First of all, is there a tefillat ne'ilah, which is a machloke between Rav and Shmuel and the Gemara in Yoma, as to whether there is a tefillat ne'ilah. Rav is the real backer of this tefillat ne'ilah. It's a total new Shmoneh Esrei. That's a full-fledged Shmoneh Esrei. If we look at what we do today, it's somewhat of a mix between the Shita of Rav and Shmuel, depending on whether it's from the Yushalmi, the Bavli, the Tosefta. It's a very complex situation. But that's one of the issues that's being brought here in this Braita that is stated in Yoma, is that you see there is Ne'ilah like the other Tfilot. That's number one. Number two is there is a Machloket in the Gemara as to whether when you say Ne'ilah, do you need to daven Maariv? Is Ne'ilah in place of Maariv? And therefore you don't have to Motzei Yom Kippur, you don't need to daven Maariv at all. Or is Ne'ilah Tfilat Yom HaKippurim and you still need to daven Maariv afterwards? This Braita seems to indicate that there's Ne'ilah and Maariv afterwards, that they're independent and not that Ne'ilah supplants the Maariv of Motzei Yom HaKippurim. So now, in that Maariv, you have two choices as to how to perform it. One says you use Me'ein Shmoneh Esrei, because people are in a rush, you're under duress from the fast, people want to get home, so you daven a shorter Shmoneh Esrei so that people can go out and eat. Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel says, it would be nice. We're not fundamentally against that, but the problem is, if you do that, you have nowhere to insert Havdalah. And you need a bracha of Chonein Adat to insert Havdalah. Now, that's not the opinion we've seen from Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel until now. Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel until now was the shita of Rabbi Eliezer ben Hurkanus, was that you insert it in Hoda'ah. Well, if you insert it in Hoda'ah, that's not a problem when you daven Me'ein Shmoneh Esrei, because Me'ein Shmoneh Esrei has the Gimel Rishonot of Shevach, Gimel Achronot of Hoda'ah. So you could have inserted it in that Shmoneh Esrei. It has nothing to do with the Havineinu in the middle. Now Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel says, I have a problem I need to get in Havdalah, so I need to have all the brachot be full, and not just be this Havineinu. The Gemara answers, Amar Rav Nachum Yitzhak, Iu Amar Mishum Avotav. He quotes that in the name of his forefathers, Velelo Sfirle, but he doesn't hold of it. Meaning that the second quote from Kamenil Gamaliel is not his own position. It's his position and he's quoting as Mesora from his forefathers. That's the position of my forefathers, but he himself does not hold of that. He himself holds, like Rabbi Lezer ben Hurkunus, that you add in Abdullah in Hoda'ah. The Bali Tosafot over here discuss why is it that the Gemara here doesn't ask, why don't you just insert Abdullah in Habineinu? The Gemara does ask that of Shmuel in Gemara in Brachot. And Tosafot over here discusses why there's a difference between the Gemaras, and he says here, since Rabbi Chanina ben Gamaliel believes every other day of the year, you daven a full Maariv. You daven a full Arvit, you do not have a condensed version of the Shmoneh Esrei. Im kein b'motzei Yom HaKippurim, then on Motzei Yom Kippurim, we're not going to allow you to just daven Havineinu and then have the problem of not being able to insert Havdalah. Because that's the standard Shmoneh Esrei that you do every other night. So that's why you shouldn't change your normal practices. Whereas in the case in Brachot, the position over there by Shmuel is all year round, you daven a Havineinu for Shmoneh Esrei. And that's where the Gemara says, okay, if you daven Havineinu all year round, the Gemara that says, don't do it on Motzei Shabbat, because on Motzei Shabbat you have to add in Havdalah. Well, if Shmoneh Esrei is good enough to daven with Havineinu all year round, then why can't you do it on Motzei Shabbat and just insert Havdalah into Havineinu? That's why the Gemara there asks it, because there, it's not deviating from the normal practice. Over here, to insert Havdalah into Havineinu would have deviated from the normal practice of saying a full Shmoneh Esrei. So there, we're not going to ask the question, we're just going to say a full Shmoneh Esrei. Over there, where the normal practice was to say Havineinu, then why deviate and say a full Shmoneh Esrei in order to get Havdalah and just get Havdalah into Havineinu? That's why the Gemara asks the question differently in Brachot than it asks over here. It doesn't challenge over here. Why can't you stick Havdalah into Havineinu? But again, here, we've got ourselves out of the problem as to why Rabbi Elazar ben Pedat, the Amora, Paskins, like Rabbi Elazar ben Hurkunus, in a sixth case now, even though he says there are only four, that's because again here, it's backed by another party. In the case of Yevamot, it was backed by Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava. In Brachot, it's backed by Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel, in the sense that he follows the Shita of Rabbi Lezer ben Hurkunus. Amalei Rabbi Yirmiyah le Rabbi Zerah, Va'at lo Tisbira. Now Rabbi Yirmiyah goes back to what Rabbi Zerah said. Rabbi Zerah got upset at Rabbi Pedat for saying that the author of the position of the Katach being a problem on Shvi'it was Rabbi Elazar ben Hurkunus. And then he says to Rabbi Pedat, you and your father now made it that everybody is Mutar in Katach. So now Rabbi Yirmiyah says to Rabbi Zerah, Va'at lo Tisbara, the Mantana de Katva Peira, Rabbi Elazar, you don't agree with Rabbi Pedat's conclusion that the one who says that the Katav, the sap, is considered to be like Peirot, is Rabbi Eliezer. Vatnan. We have another Mishnah which seems to indicate that this is the position of Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Hama'amid Bisraf Orla. Someone who is curdling cheese using the sap from a tree that is Orla. Asur. That creates a problem. And you see from that it is clearly classified as Orla. Orla does not have application to the tree, does not have application to the Eitzim. Orla is a din in the fruits of a tree. If you take sap out of an Orla tree, that means that if you think it's a sur, that means that you think the sap is a fruit, because Orla only has application by fruits. So the fact that Rabbi Eliezer ben Hurkunus says, if you curdle cheese using the sap of the top tree that was Orla, then it's problematic. That shows you he thinks that that sap is fruit. If that's the case, then that shows you, that demonstrates that the Tana, with that opinion, is Rabbi Elazar ben Hurkunus. How do you disagree with that? Because no, afilo teima rabbonon. Even the rabbonon can agree that sap has a din of fruits. Ad kan lo pligi rabbonon le de Rabbi Eliezer, ele bekatva de gabzo. They only argue on Rabbi Eliezer with the sap of the trunk. Aval bekatva de peira modile. But if it's the sap of the fruits, then they would agree with them. There is raf that comes from the unripened fruits. These aren't fruits that are ripened, but rather unripened fruits, pagim, these immature fruits. That reason that they're good for this is because they have a high acidic content. And so then when you get that juice or whatever the sap, quote unquote, that comes out of those pagim sap is considered to be something that's good for curdling, because of the acidic content of it. And so that's why they differentiate. When they speak about sap of the tree itself, there they disagree and say that it's not a fruit. But he's dealing with the liquid that comes out of the fruit, the sap of the fruit, over there they're going to agree that it is a derivative of the fruit. It's not, because we have a Mishnah Orla, Amar Rav Yeshua, Shemati Beferush, I heard explicitly, Shemamid Bisraf Halin, Bisraf HaIkarin. You're allowed to use for curdling the sap of the leaves and the sap of the roots. That's mutar. The sraf pagin, asur. But the sraf of the immature fruits, mipneshu pri. Because that's considered to be like a pri. So you see a Mishnah that backs up this idea that there are different types of liquids that can emanate from the tree. There's the sap of the trunk. There the chachamim say that is wood. That's not considered to be fruit. And similarly, the sap that comes at the leaves, if you mush the leaves or you take off the stem of the leaf and you get some liquid that comes out of there, that's also not considered to be tree, as well as the sap that you take out of the roots of the tree. All of those liquids are not problematic, they're not a pre. The one exception is that the sraf of the pagim, of these immature fruits, that does have a din of fruit because it's considered to be a fruit. And even though it's not a fruit that's edible, it's not a fruit of the tree, it's still a product of the tree that is like a fruit, and the derivative of that is also going to be considered to be orla. Vibaitema, another way to solve the problem is, ki pligi rabbanan alei de Rabbi Eliezer, bilano sefeirot. The rabbanan argue on Rabbi Eliezer in a tree that produces fruit. It's a fruit-bearing tree. In a fruit-bearing tree, the sap is not the fruit. Because the fruit are the fruit, and the sap is not the fruit. Aval bilan sheino sefeirot, but in a tree that has no fruit, it's not a fruit-bearing tree, then the katfa modu, the katfo zepu biro. In that case, then the sap becomes the fruit of the tree, because that's the product of the tree. Now, if you go to maple trees, in the second answer, then the sap of a maple tree would be considered a pri in the second answer, according to the chachamim. Because over here, even though it's coming from the trunk, it's the only product of the tree. The tree is not a fruit-bearing tree. It is the fruit of the tree, it's the sap. So when you have regular fruit, then the sap is inconsequential vis-a-vis the fruits of the tree, and therefore it's not considered to be a pri. But when it's the only product of the tree, then that becomes the pri of the tree, and in that way you could reconcile the chachamim arguing on Rabbi Eliezer in the case of the sap, where it's coming from a fruit tree, and if, for instance, Rabbi Zera thinking that he agrees to their position in cases where the sap is the fruit of the tree. It's not. We have a Mishnah in Shvi'it. B'shevan Omer, Ein L'Ktaf Shvi'it. This Ktaf tree doesn't have a din in Shvi'it. B'chachamim Armim, Yesh L'Ktaf Shvi'it. The Ktaf does have Shvi'it. Mipnei, Shiketafo, Zehu Pirio. Because the Ktafo, again, the word is used interchangeably to mean the tree itself, the name of the tree, as well as the product of the tree. The tree is known by its product. So the ktaf is the sap that comes out of the ktaf tree. So that's why in the ktafo zempirio, man chachamim, who are the chachamim over there? Lav rabbonan de poligalei de Rabbi Eliezer. Isn't it the chachamim, they're arguing Rabbi Eliezer, and yet they're still saying sap is considered to be a fruit, and therefore that backs up what we're saying here, that in non-fruit-bearing trees, the sap is the fruit. Amalei ha'usaba hachi amar Rabbi Yochanan. That's not necessarily true. One elderly individual said, Amar Rav Yochanan man chachamim. Who are the chachamim in that Mishnah? Rabbi Eliezer. That is the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer. Demar ktafo zehu piryo. That the ktaf is the fruit, or in essence what Rabbi Yochanan is saying is that the chachamim don't agree. They think that the sap is never considered to be the fruit, and that would kind of undermine this position that we're taking. Where it says, E Rabbi Eliezer, if it's Rabbi Eliezer is the author of that position, my area, Ilan Shein Osef Pri, then why are we only speaking about a tree that is not fruit-bearing? Afilo Ilan Osef Pri, Ktafo Zeh Imperio. According to Rabbi Eliezer, he makes no distinction. And even trees that are bearing fruit have a din of the sap being like the pri. So the Gemara answer is that Rabbi Eliezer is saying the Divrayim de Rabbanan Kamar Lohu. He was saying it in the position of the Rabbanan. Lididi, according to me, Afilo Ilan Osef Pri wrote, in my personal position, irrespective of whether the tree is a fruit-bearing tree or not, the sap is considered to be fruit. According to you, Rabbanan, Odolimiat, at least admit to me, Bilan Shenu Set Beirot, in a tree that doesn't give fruit or bear fruit, Tafozeu Beirot, that the sap is the pre. Rabbanan Amrile, the Rabbanan responded to him, Lo Shnat, makes no difference. Whether it's a fruit-bearing tree or not a fruit-bearing tree, the sap is never fruit. So at least according to Rabbi Yochanan, this Ibait Ema does not work because we can't get the position of the Rabbanan to fit into these other Mishnayot and say they agree to Rabbi Lezer in some instances. But before Rabbi Yochanan's position, you could have had that possibility of suggesting that the Rabbanan are mechalek between fruit trees and non-fruit trees. In the end, the Gemara dispels that because of Rabbi Yochanan's statement. But then we still have the first answer, which was the fact that the Rabbanan agree in cases of where the sap is not the sap from the trunk, rather the sap from the unripened fruits. There, you could have a din of pre. Right now, the Gemara says, Ezuhi bitula. The Mishnah says, what is considered to be a bitula in the Mishnah? Kol shelo rata. Any woman who has yet to have a start of her menstrual cycle. Tarabanat, niseit. If she gets married, Rata dam machmat nisuin. And she sees dam because she got married, meaning dam bitulim. She's having bia for the first time, so her dam bitulim. Yalda, if she gives birth, virata dam, machmat leida, and she saw blood as part of the birthing process, adayin ani kore la bitula. I still define her as a bitula. So obviously the meaning of the word bitula over here does not mean a virgin, a woman who has yet to have bia. The word bitula means a woman who has yet to reach her menstruation. The betula that's mentioned in the Mishnah is betula tamim, a woman who has yet to reach the point where her menstrual cycle has begun. Below, betula betulim. And it does not mean a betula betulim, which means a regular betula, which is a woman who is a virgin who has yet to have biyah. There are a number of interesting points over here. Again, we'll get into it later in the Masechta, but just note over here that the possibility of a woman giving birth, even though she has yet to menstruate, which is something that would be a little bit difficult because you need ovulation, of course, in order to there to be pregnancy. And with absent ovulation, then you're not going to have pregnancy. And ovulation, by definition, brings with it the menstrual cycle. Although you could argue a possibility if the woman was married while she was a ktana, in her first ovulation, she gets pregnant. And therefore, she never has a menstrual cycle, even though she already has ovulated and is pregnant. But it would be an unusual or pretty far-fetched case, but it is possible to think of such an instance. But what the Gemara is showing here is that the definition of betula over here is not your standard betula. It's a betula in our context, which means betula tamim, someone has yet to reach a menstrual cycle. Gemara's discussion is about dam sightings that are not dam leida and not dam betulim. Dam betulim has its own din, and it's Torah the Gamre. We do institute, we'll see later on in the Gemara, that we worry about Dam Nida being captured inside of Dam Tulim, and therefore we worry that she is Tumeya, we're Choshesh for that. And Dam Leida has its own rules in terms of Tuma Dara, nothing to do with Dam Nida. So the question is, Dam cited outside the context of Leida and outside the context of Tula, what is the status of that Dam? And the Mishnah said, Dayashata, that any Dam sightings there are prospective Tuma, not retroactive Tuma. And that's even if she's had Dam Leida in another context, even if she's had Dam Tulim in another context. So that Dam doesn't change the fact that the Dam she cites that should be Dam Nida is only prospective Tuma, not retroactive Tuma. Mar says, Ini, is that really true that you can define the word Betula in our Mishnah to be Betula Tamim? Vamar Rav Kana, Tana Gimo Betulotain. There are three Betulot. Betulat Adam, Tulat Karka, Tulat Shikma. These three areas. Tulat Adam is Kozman Shlo Nivala. A woman has yet to have intercourse. She's considered to be a Betula. Nafkamina, why does it matter? The Kohen Gadol. Because then she's able to marry a Kohen Gadol. Kohen Gadol must marry a Betula. So as long as she has not been Nivala, she's a Betula. She can marry a Kohen Gadol. Inami Liktubata Matayim. The other factor is that a woman who is a Betula gets 200 zuz in her ktubah. If she's a Be'ula, she only gets 100 zuz in her ktubah. So these are two nafkaminot to betulat adam, which is a reference to the virginity of a woman. Betulat karka is called manshel nevda. It's land that has yet to be tilled or worked. Nafkamina, the nachal eitan, makes a difference for nachal eitan, which is a requirement for the egla rufa. Egla rufa has to have its neck broken in an area that is Nachleitan, an area that was never tilled, never worked, never fertile. And so then this would qualify because it's betulat karka. Iname lemekach umemka. Or for commercial transactions. If you promise to sell a certain type of karka, which is betulat karka, then you have to give land that was never ever worked. That's because, as Rashi says over here, it's highly productive. Because all the nutrients and all the good things that are in the soil have yet to be used up. And therefore the first crops that are planted there are usually excessively good. And so if you make a transaction to buy betulat karka, that's the definition of betulat karka. Betulat shikma is a sycamore tree. Kozman shlo niktsatsa. Means anytime you have yet to prune it or cut it down. Nafkamina lemekach umemkar. It is a nafkamina for sales. You sell a betulat shikma, means a sycamore that is yet to be cut. And therefore you're going to cut the first logs or boards that can come off such a tree. Veinami lemiktsatsa b'shvid. The other nafkamina is whether you're allowed to cut it on shvid. You're not allowed to do avoda in the karka on shvid that has productive qualities to it, which means that it's going to grow things, it's going to improve whatever that is there. You can't necessarily water the fields, you can't till the fields, you can't do things that are productive in terms of the growth of the items that are there. So over here, if the tree is a betulat shikma, it's never been cut then, if you cut it the first time, you cause an acceleration in the growth and a better growth afterwards. So this is a effective pruning, which improves the ilan, improves the tree. So that type of cutting would be asur on shvid. If it's already been cut once on shvid, and now you're coming to cut it the second time on shvid, that's not a problem. That's just cutting for wood. You're allowed to chop trees and take etzim on shvid, as long as it's not creating improvement in the tree. That's not happening here, because the first time you cut it, the next lungs are going to be better, so that's an improvement. Once you already cut it once, and this is the second time, you might grow back, but it's still not going to make it better than it is now. So that's not an improvement in the tree. That's simply taking a tzim from the tree, which is permitted on shvid. Kids done. As we have a Mishnah in shvid. Ain't kot tzim tulat shikma b'shvid, mivnei shehi avodah. It's in avodah dakark, because you're improving the tree. That's only in the first instance when it's a tulat shikma. Vimita, if you're right that our Mishnah is speaking about tulat damim, there's a fourth betulah. Why is that not mentioned? Litnei namiha. Mention this one as well. Why are there only three and not four? Amrav Nachum Ayitzka, Kintani, Midei, Delet, Le, Shem, Levi. The betulot that are mentioned in the Mishnah are standard generic betulot. About Midei, Delet, Le, Shem, Levi, something that's called tulat damim, which it requires a adjective to give you the noun phrase that you're looking for, lo tani, that is not included. Now that's very interesting because, yes, bitulat adam, stam bitulah, you say to a person bitulah, you would assume it means a virgin. But by bitulah, you wouldn't think that means bitulat karka. You wouldn't think that means bitulat shikma. How's that different than bitulat damim? Rashi says something very interesting, and he says, because you could say, karka bitula. You can move the adjective after and not have to put it before. You can say this is karka that is virgin, and you'll know what that means. You can say shikma bitula. This is a sycamore that's virgin, so you'll know that means it was never cut. You cannot say damim bitula. You can't say that. That doesn't have any meaning. So you must say bitula damim. That makes it into a noun phrase. In that case, it has a shem levi with it, an additional modifier with it in order to give you the meaning, and that's what's not included over here. The other items have to do with an action involved. Something that has no action involved is not included. All the other things require a maise. Tulat shikma requires you to cut it in order for it to be not a tulat shikma. In order for something not to be betulat karka, it has to be worked. In order for a woman not to be classified as a betulah, she has to be nivellet. So there, in order to remove the shame betulah, you need an action. Here, by betulat damim, you don't have to do anything for it to be removed. It will happen by itself. Rabbi Chanina bei de Rabbi Ikamar, Kintani mide de lo hadar le briyato. The items that are mentioned here are things that don't return to their former state. Mide de hadar le briyato, loktani. Things that don't return to their former state are not mentioned here. So, for instance, the case of a woman who's a virgin, after she has biyah, she can never return to that status. She's nivelet. Same thing with karka. Karka, once it's worked, you can't return it to virgin soil, because it was worked already. And same with sycamore. Once you cut it once, you can't then return it to being a Betulat Shikma, because anything that goes afterwards is after it being a Betulat Shikma. That's not true by a woman, because a woman reaches a point of menopause, which is that at some point, she will return to being Mesulekat Damim. She right now has no cycle. And even though she will now have a cycle at some point, there is a spur in the future where she will return to her former state when she hits menopause. The things that are mentioned here are things that people specifically specify or are particular about when they make purchases. Things that buyers don't necessarily worry about, they don't write them. So in the case of the betulah, a person who's getting married is very particular about the fact that the woman he's marrying is a betulah. That's something that makes a difference in the quote-unquote transaction, not a transaction here, but in the kiddushin that is performed and the nisuin that is performed. In betulat karka, if a person specifically bought unworked land, that is something that he is makpid on. If you give him something that is worked, that's not what he intended and that's not what he wanted to buy. And same way with the betulat shikma. He particularly wanted a betulat shikma. You give him something else, he will be upset about it, and he will not want the purchase to go through. And then in a betulat damim, does it really matter whether the woman that he is marrying is menstruating yet or not menstruating yet? It's not a relevant issue. In the end, she will menstruate at some point, and therefore it's not something that people are makpid on. That's why it's not included in the list. Where it says, "Velo kapte," is that true? People are not particular about a menstruating woman. Vatanya, we mentioned this in the introduction to the Masechta. They have a bright, Rabbi Chia Omer, b'shem shehasaor yafel isa. Just like fermentation, a yeast or a sourdough is good for dough. Kach damim yafim liisha. So too, dam, meaning the menstrual cycle of a woman, is good for a woman. So there, the sourdough or the yeast is something that is a small item, but it enhances the isa. It makes the bread in the end. So too, the menstrual cycle of the woman is an enhancement of the woman. And obviously it's relying or resting on this statement of Rabbi Meir, which is that the woman who has more menstrual flow will have more children. There's some correlation between the heaviness or the volume of the menstrual flow and the bearing of children. So people see that as a big plus. If they want a woman who's going to bear children for them, then a menstrual cycle or a damim would be a positive. Now, the truth is that that might be a positive, irrespective of what Rabbi Meir says. If a woman's menstruating, then she can have children. She can bear children. You're marrying a woman who can bear children. If she's not menstruating, then there is probably an issue in terms of her ability to bear children, or she's too young to bear children. So it might have an impact from that facet, irrespective of what you say by Rabbi Meir. That Rabbi Meir also has this additional factor that the menstruation or the damim is a siman to lots of children. Ella, titane mide de kapitza lezbina. So this last answer or distinction that's Rabbi Ravina, we're going to modify it to say that they only quoted the three betulot. There are things that people jump on. Man, these are mitziyot. You can't find them all the time. It's hard to find a betulah. It's hard to find betulat karka. It's hard to find a betulat shikma. On the other hand, either the lo kapitza leizvina, lo tani.
But betulat damim, which is the exact opposite of what they want to find, they want to find a woman who is menstruating and does have damim, then lo kapitza leiz, then betulat damim is not something that people jump on to buy. All the other betulot are considered to be positive, something that people would insist or demand when they are purchasing. Over here, the person would want just the opposite of what is termed as betulat damim, and therefore it's not considered in the list of betulot over here.
Tarabanan, izu betulat karka. What is considered to be betulat karka? Kol shemale rishushim. Vein afratichoch. And its earth is not soft. Anything that has on it, Rashi says we rishushim, avanim dakim. Gravel. It has gravel that is spread around on it, or Lashon Echeri says Rigvei Adama, clods of earth, which is not crumbling, it doesn't come into a finer earth. It's a blocks or clods of earth that do not have the capacity to grow things in because they are solid rather than being something that is a finer aerated material where you can put or plant something in it. Nimsa b'cheres. If you find any earthenware there, b'yadua sh'nevda. You know that it was already used. Cheres in their day, and still till today. Anytime you go somewhere and you start digging and you find shards of pottery, you know somebody lived here before. There's some civilization that's been here. Shards of pottery are not a natural phenomenon. They are a product, basically, of garbage dump of human beings. In their day, the equivalent of plastic and one-time use issues was kli cheres. And kli cheres broke all the time, and they were used all the time, and then they just got left in place, so they were dumped somewhere. So that's like, if you find kli cheres, that's already an indication that somebody's been here before, somebody has used this land before. Tsunama, arezu betulat karka, bedrock, has the same din as betulat karka. If you're selling it, we know if there's bedrock there, then it wasn't used, this land, because there is bedrock there. Me'uberet mishivadav ubra. A woman who's pregnant is classified as pregnant once her pregnancy is visible. Kama hakarata ubar. When does the pregnancy become visible? Sumchus omer mishum Rabbi Meir, shlosha chodeshim. 3 months is when it's visible on the woman that she is pregnant. Ba'afo pishein ra'ya ledavar, even though we have proof to this, zecha ledavar, there is a hint to this, shenemar, because it says, by Tamar, when she comes pregnant from Yehuda, v'hi kemishlosh chodeshim, v'gomer, etc. After 3 months, it became known that she was pregnant. They didn't know until that point in time, but at 3 months they did know. Zecher ledavar, why is it called a zecher ledavar? Kroktiv, it's in the pasuk, v'raya gedolai. It's an absolute proof. It's not just a hint. It sounds pretty compelling that the reason they knew she was pregnant is because 3 months had elapsed. Shum de'ika de'alda le'tet. De'ika de'alda le'shiva. Because you have an issue, which is that women carrying to full term can either be, according to the Gemara, a full 9 months, or 7 months. And therefore, you would have thought that possibly we have to take one-third, a ratio of relativity, which is that if in 9 months, 3 months is considered to be hukara ubar, then a woman is carrying to 7 months, then 2 1/3 months would be 1/3 of the way through, and that should be hukari ubar. The answer is no. That we say, for all women, the default is 3 months, even though they're going to carry 7 months. So the pasuk is a hint at that, is a corroboration of that, but it's not an absolute proof, because we don't know, in that case, if she was carrying 9 months or 7 months, and if she was carrying 7 months, then it would be a proof that 3 months apply even to a 7 month pregnancy. But if she carried 9 months, it would only be a proof that it's 3 months and it's 1/3. It doesn't prove that it's always 3 months. Tarabanan, haray shaita v'cheskat mi'uberet. She was considered to be a mu'beret v'rata dam. And all of a sudden she sees blood. V'achar kach hipila ruach. And then she miscarries, or kutubah she'en shol kayama. She gives birth to something that's not a viable fetus. Harayi v'cheskata. She remains in her cheska of being pregnant with dayashata. And therefore the sightings of dam that she has are only prospective tuma, not retroactive tuma. Even though there's no proof from this, there is a hint at this. Shinamar, the pasuk in Yeshayahu says, harinu, chalnu, kamo yavladnu ruach. So the word harinu is like from the word herayom. We were pregnant. Chalnu is from the word like choleh. We were sick, meaning that we were with the burdens of pregnancy. Yalad nuruach. In the end, we gave birth to a non-viable entity. So we went through all the trouble of pregnancy and all the pains and the sickness of pregnancy. And yet in the end, we miscarried. But what you see from here is that the pasuk calls it a pregnancy, even though in the end, the product is not a viable entity. So the Gemara says again, my zecha the dabar. Why is that only a hint? Hare rayak dolai. It's actually a good proof. It says, "Kikatim haikrab zecharimtim." That pasuk, even though it sounds great, is a reference to men. It's not a reference to women in general. It's just a mashal, and it's as if they were pregnant. It's not that they literally were pregnant, and so it's a mashal and not really a proof text because it's not talking about a real pregnancy. Vermini, is that really true that a miscarriage is considered to be a full-fledged pregnancy? And the birth has a din like Gleida. Because Kashata Shnaim, she had difficulty, birth pangs, contractions for 2 days. Ulishlishi Hipila Ruach. And on the 3rd day, she miscarried and had a sack of air. or a non-viable entity, a non-viable fetus, or zo, you'll let it be zo. She's classified as giving birth with a ziva, a tumat ziva. This is what we discussed yesterday, that a woman has sighting of dam during her yamei ziva, that means in the 11 days after the first 7 days of her being a nida, the 11 days of yamei ziva, she sees dam in those days of yamei ziva 3 days in a row, she becomes a ziva gedola, and she's required to wait shiva nikim and bring a korban. So that is if she has sighting of dam during her yamei ziva. We also noted that if she has sightings of dam from leida, then that's all considered to be dam leida and not dam ziva. Now, we also saw yesterday that if there's a cessation of the bleeding from the contraction and other things for 24 hours, and then she gives birth, the dam that was before the cessation is not considered to be dam leida, and is subject to the regular rules of dam ziva. If she saw for 3 days, then had a respite for 24 hours, and then gave birth, the 3 days of sightings before during Yom Ziva make her into a Zavag Dola. Then when she gives birth, she's Veya Tumat Leida. So she'll have two Tumot that she has to deal with. Tumat Leida and Tumat Ziva. And that's what the Breita is saying over here as well, which is in this instance, she will be considered, you'll let it dissolve. Even though there was no cessation between the beginning of the bleeding and the Leida, which in a normal case would be classified as Dam Leida and there'd be no Ziva, but over here, because her birth was not a viable entity, therefore, the dam that she saw all along is not classified as dam leida, but dam ziva. Dam that she saw during her mate ziva, and now she's a zava, and if she gives birth to something that qualifies as tumat leida, she'll be, you'll let it, zov, giving birth as a zov. And therefore she'll need shiva nikim and a korban for her ziva, irrespective or independent of what happens with regards to the leida. Via mark leida ma'ayotahi. If you say when you have these problematic births, they're classified as being a full-fledged birth, we already established that if you have bleeding, contractions, pain going into the birthing process, as long as there's no cessation of that for 24 hours, then that's considered to be dam leida, and it's Torah. It's not subject to the dinim of nida and zava. So you see from here that clearly, they don't think that the miscarriage or the problematic birth is considered to be a herayon and a leida. A rabbi hanach made late the rabbonon. So rabbi says enochanami, it's not considered to be a leida. And if it's not considered to be a leida, then why, by the case of a woman who is pregnant, do we say that when she has a setting of dam afterwards, tayashata, it's only prospective tuma? That's because an 8 to 8 is the rabbonon, like we saw in yesterday's daf. It's a very light form of takana derabanan. It's just a sayag. We said that it was even more mekil than regular tumot derabanan. And therefore, they just were mekil in this case. So even though it's not classified as a pregnancy in other realms of halacha, over here from 8 to 8 derabanan, it is classified as a leida. Papa amar, midu taima la mishum derosha kavedala, veverea kavedimala. Even though the vlad over here, the birth, that is a miscarriage or not a viable entity is not considered to be a birth or a leida. Nevertheless, we still give her dayashata because the choli, the sickness or the physiological implications of pregnancy are the same. And what he's saying is it's not the pregnancy inherently that takes away the dam. It is the symptoms and the physiological implications of pregnancy that take away the damim. And so, Al-Khanami, Rosha Bevera, Kiveti Mala. So too, in this miscarriage, or the birth of non-viable entity, it's no different than a regular pregnancy, where she feels ill, where she feels heavy, where she has all the symptoms and physiological signs of pregnancy. And so, whether she gives birth to a viable entity, or she does not give birth to a viable entity, she's still subject to the same physiological changes in her body that contribute to the siluk hadamim. And so it's not whether she had a leida or didn't have a leida. It's simply that going through the physiological changes of pregnancy is enough to take away the damim. And therefore, even though halakhically it's not deemed a leida, this miscarriage or this non-viable entity, nevertheless, the physiological experience that she has is similar to regular pregnancy, and that's what causes the siluk damim, according to Rav Papa. Okay, we're going to stop here, five lines down on the top of Tet Amud Aleph.